Chapter 5. The road to Fort Blanche was narrow, as sun-bleached and winding as a strand of silk witch's hair. Beyond the thin sliver of it that I could see through my carriage window, the Isle de Luz cliffs tumbled uninterrupted down to the ocean, a near vertical drop, like the knife ridge of a man's nose. Waves frothed at the base of the rocks, their unceasing surge seeming to grow more fevered, more agitated with each metre I travelled, as if angered by my departure. I watched as far below me a white-capped swell swallowed a boulder, then gradually retreated, leaving behind a lacy layer of salt. While I couldn't yet see it, I knew that somewhere above the roof of my carriage, Fort Blanche's white terrace extended weightlessly out over the cliffs like a bird's wing, observing the tides in proud defiance of the tug of the ocean below. Local myths held that the structure was kept aloft only by weaver magic, that when Fort Blanche had first been built centuries ago, 99 of the most beautiful silk witches in Balmore had given their hair to enchant the solid granite, which at noonday was said to shine white gold from the mage silk woven into its walls. According to the legends, the stone would never crumble, never crack, so long as a man of Allaire blood dwelled at the heart of Fort Blanche for it to bear up. A pity that the enchantment did not extend to safeguarding those who walked the great house's halls. I imagined a shape, darting past the glass of my window, struck from the sky and racing toward the blue maw of the water below. Ophelia Lear's descent would have been so swift, her end so certain as it raced up to meet her. If I let my mind blur, I could almost hear the echo of her scream in the wind, tumbling after her like a long tail, barely out of her mouth before she hit the rocks. My tongue sat thick and heavy in my mouth. The sea was an open grave. It would not have been filled by her. It would have room enough for me. I pictured it, thump against the current. And then the slow sink of my body, down toward nothingness, the very pit of the world. Twisting my gloved hands in my lap, I looked away, my movement causing my seatmate's eyes to jump in my direction. Aside from a brief exchange when Elliot's coach had arrived at the address I'd given him, he had not spoken to me for the whole of our ride together. He hadn't even bothered to help me with my single shabby travelling case after his carriage had rolled to a stop in front of my doorstep earlier in the morning. Instead, he'd merely cracked his coach door, his shadow falling through the breath of space like a black velvet cloak as he called out, "Is your brother in?" I'd shaken my head, and he'd huffed approvingly, pushing the door open farther.